Okay, this is the hour we're going to take your phone calls with Howard Bloom. So get ready, and we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, your phone calls. Howard Bloom with us. Howard, when you brought up Iran last hour, let me ask you, of course, Israel none too happy with this deal that these nations are putting together.
It's not so much Israel that is unhappy. It's the Saudis. The Saudis have been
Very unhappy. Yeah,
they are furious, absolutely furious. They've been furious with us for a year and a half because we wouldn't step into their war in Syria. The war, we've discussed the fact that the war in Syria is not what it seems. It's not a civil war. It's a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia for 6 years has been scared to death that it's been encircled by Iran and it's about to have the life snuffed out of it by Iran. Now, 6 years ago, it had an ally. That ally was called Egypt. And then the Arab Spring came along, and that ally has been yanked away. Right now, Egypt is in play. Turkey is going after it. The Egyptians accuse the Iranians of supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And then there's the current coup regime. But none of it is Saudi. And the Saudis feel terribly alone. And their big enemy is Iran. They know Iran is going for mega power status in the Middle East. So they signaled to us how miserable they were or angry they were when they were offered a seat at the UN Security Council, which would be a prize for most countries. And they turned their back on it and they walked away. Then 10 days ago, they signaled us again by leaking stories that if we didn't make sure that the Iranians were disarmed from a nuclear point of view, if we didn't make sure that the Iranians had no nuclear weapons, the Saudis said, look, we have been financing the Pakistani nuclear program for years, and we haven't been doing it out of charity. Now, remember, the Pakistanis tested their first nuclear bomb in 1998. That's 15 years ago, and they've been building up
and their father of atomic energy gave the plans to Iran and also, I'm sure, the North Koreans, didn't he?
Well, he got the plans from the North Koreans. He was underwritten by the two enemies, the Iranians and the Saudis. And what the Saudis were trying to tell us, that's A.Q. Khan.
Who's under house arrest, but he's living like a king.
Yes, exactly. He's considered a huge hero. But the point is that the Saudis were trying to tell us, look, we have nuclear weapons on cash and carry. They're waiting for us in bags at the grocery store. They're waiting in Pakistan. All we have to do is pick them up. And they leaked further information that they have 20-year-old, 3,000-mile range Chinese missiles, that those missiles are already aimed at two places, at Iran and Israel, and that the plans, the blueprints for the nuclear weapon that Pakistan made were taken from the Chinese. And it's a plan for a missile that's specifically designed for the nose cone of this particular missile. And they also let us know that they have new missiles on order. So they are telling us in signal after signal, we are furious at you. In fact, they've said that the Americans lied to us, that they told us there were going to be negotiations. They didn't let us in on what the substance was of the negotiations. They didn't even have the courtesy to brief us face-to-face. And we're just going to have to take over our own security by ourselves, which means the spread of nuclear weapons all over the Middle East.
Well, one of the things, as you know, the Saudis are concerned about is because they want to retain their control over that little kingdom. And, you know, the Saudi kings and princes and princesses, they don't want to relinquish that.
No, they don't want to relinquish it. In 1979, when the Islamic Revolution took place in Iran, it was not, you know, it's not called in Iran, it is not called the Iranian Islamic Revolution. Iran is simply known in Iran as the country of the Islamic Revolution. Why? Because from the very beginning and written into the Iranian constitution is the idea that this is a revolution for the entire Islamic world, and that anybody who doesn't follow the plans of the Ayatollah Khomeini's original Iranian revolution is not really Muslim. and as a consequence needs to be knocked out of power. And the first people to be, the first guy they wanted to knock out of power was Saddam Hussein. They pulled that off by feeding us phony information about weapons of mass destruction through their, the head of their intelligence fed it directly to Amit Chalabi, who was busy lobbying us in Washington at the Pentagon, the White House, and very successfully. So Bush, it's not that Bush and Cheney lied about weapons of mass destruction. They did not. Tony Blair did not lie about weapons of mass destruction. They genuinely believed that there were weapons of mass destruction in Saddam Hussein's Iraq, and they knew it because they had documentary evidence and they had defectors who had actually helped build the weapons of mass destruction. The only problem is all that documentary evidence and all those defectors came to us from the Iranians, who were making it up because they'd spent $1 trillion and a million lives in an 8-year war to try to knock Saddam Hussein out of power,
and
hadn't
could not.
Gotten anywhere.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
So
Netanyahu wasn't too happy with this deal either.
No, he said that this is not a historic deal. It's a historically bad deal. But it's really the Saudis who are doing the most kicking and who are raising the most difficulty and who are making it known that they, look, they've stood by us in a funny kind of way. They attacked us in a strange way in 1973 when they led the OPEC in the Arab oil embargo. And that
most of those hijackers were Saudis.
They were almost all Saudis. Remember, the Saudis operate on two sides of their face simultaneously. They are our best buddies, and they keep the price of oil down to less than $110 a barrel to keep from bankrupting our economy. And at the same time, they give tremendous amounts of money to, quote, charities, unquote. Yeah. And those charities, many of them give their money directly to Al-Qaeda forces everywhere from Nigeria and Mali to 13,500 miles away to the Philippines. So there are two really big financiers of terror around the world today. One of them is Iran, which runs two proxy armies in Iraq, one proxy army in Lebanon that has practically taken Lebanon over. By the way, they have taken over, for all practical purposes, the Iranians have, for all practical purposes, taken over Iraq. They have another proxy army, Hamas, in Gaza. And according to the Saudis, and I suspect the Saudis are right, they have proxy armies in Yemen, and they have they have allies in the Sudan. So they are trying to manipulate things all over, literally all over the world. But guess who else is? The Saudis. And between the two of them, are two enemies of each other, one of which pretends to be a friend of ours. But both of them are financing terrorism all over the globe, including in South America and Colombia.
Let's take some calls here for you, Howard. Let's go to Bill, first-time caller, truck driving in Indiana. Bill, you're on with Howard Bloom. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Wanted to challenge Mr. Bloom a little bit on the smart cars, for one, and on Steve Forbes for another. But on smart cars, aren't smart trucks on the way? They're going to put a guy like me out of business.
And I don't know about smart trucks because I stay on top of this. You know, Technology Review, the magazine from MIT, has done a very good job of tracking this for the last at least 10 years. And there was a recent article about the advances at BMW and at Google, and it didn't, to the best of my memory, and my memory's not the greatest, but it didn't mention smart trucks. So I don't know. Let's hope. Look, Bill, I used to hitchhike. And truck drivers who picked me up did incredible things for me. So I certainly don't want you to be out of a job.
And what was the thing on Forbes, Bill?
I just, you know, it's only a logical next step. But on Steve Forbes, hey, Steve Forbes only countered what goes on all the time on Time Magazine.
Well, that's true.
Right.
You've got political entrenchments on both sides of the aisle, and there was a certain validity to what Steve Forbes was saying. Putin has played his hand, which is a small hand, a tiny little hand, better in many ways than Barack Obama has played his much richer hand. Putin has, comes back to George's subject, confidence. In any face-to-face showdown, including face-to-face showdowns between elks, rats, cats, any kind of animal that you want to pick. It's he who shows the most confidence who wins. And Putin has done all kinds of things to show you how athletic and strong and absolutely ferocious and he is and will never back down. Barack Obama likes to make apologies. He doesn't make them as often as he's accused of, but he does make them from time to time. And he does not come into a negotiation looking strong. In fact, he usually goes into a negotiation and offers something before the other side offers anything. And in a negotiation with people like the Iranians, you do not do that. In fact, you pretend that the things that you're willing to concede are things that you are unwilling to concede, and you make the other side fight for it. That's what the Iranians have done. Almost everything that they've given us in the way of concessions has been something they wanted or had were forced to give anyway. For example, they installed 5,050 nuclear reactors between the beginning of the year and roughly June in a six-month period, and then they had a stop to digest. So what did they advertise? Oh, we are giving a concession to the West. We're stopping making centrifuges. And now they're offering to stop making centrifuges or at least stop putting new ones in line for the next 6 months. They have to do that anyway. 5,000 centrifuges is an awful lot to digest.
Don't you still feel, Howard, of some impending doom out there somehow?
Oh, yes. We've been in danger of impending doom for a long time. But you got to remember something. I mean, remember, you and I grew up in days when we were given exercises in school in which we had to hide under the desk and put our hands over the back of our necks to protect ourselves against nuclear attack. And we were terrified when we were kids of nuclear Armageddon, the end of humanity, period.
Our neighbors would build fallout shelters in their basements.
Exactly. But if you go back to roughly 1100 A.D., there was a guy named the Pope. He was a reasonable expert on world affairs, and he was one of the top experts on world affairs. And he saw this new weapon coming along, and he said it was going to be the end of humanity. It was going to exterminate humanity. And he banished it from war, which didn't last long, because when you've got a good weapon, people are going to use it. It was called the crossbow. So we've been living with fear of extermination. In fact, when we don't have something to be afraid of, when it comes to extermination, we make something up. The second coming, the rapture, the equivalent in Iranian terms, the coming of the hidden imam, in which the whole world is going to end. The William Miller, who in the 19th century said the world was going to end in 1932, and when it didn't, revised his figures and came out with a new figure, and he's got 20 or more than 23 million followers today, even though neither of his predictions come true. We have a positive zest and appetite for pictures of Armageddon, the end of the world, and the end of humanity. So even if there's nothing in sight that's going to end humanity, we'll make something up.
Our next caller, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, we go. Josh is with us. Hey, Josh, go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually a first-time caller. It's a real honor.
Super. Thank you.
This is a quick question for Howard. Do you think that nuclear power one day will just be abolished and maybe we'll finally be learning from the teachings of Nikola Tesla?
Well, we're in a funny way, we're learning from the teachings of Nikola Tesla all the time. He's a cult figure. For those who don't know who Nikola Tesla was, Nikola Tesla was a Serbian engineer, and he was beyond an engineer. He was a scientific thinker and inventor par excellence. And he was the scientific brains behind George Westinghouse in a battle with a guy named Thomas Alva Edison. Thomas Alva Edison was promoting the idea of wiring the country with direct current, and Tesla had come up with a way to wire it with an alternating current, which made much, much, much longer power lines possible. And Westinghouse was backing him, and they had a mammoth battle. The electric chair was invented as a PR stunt by Thomas Alva Edison. He wanted to show you how dangerous alternating current could be. He electrocuted an elephant just to show you how dangerous alternating current could be. And Nikola Tesla came up with, among other ideas, the idea of broadcasting electricity through the air So you wouldn't have to plug into a wall. You wouldn't have to use copper cables. And his idea is a favorite, all of his ideas. He's worshipped by people in high technology. And people have been trying to replicate his techniques or advance his techniques and make them practical. So again, you wouldn't have to plug your laptop in, ever, because it would recharge itself.
You wouldn't have any need for electrical outlets in your house.
Absolutely. And there are people, one of my friends, Nova Spivak, who's a genius and is a major high-tech entrepreneur, has been working on this for a long time. There are many others who've been working on it. And guess what? You know that I'm in partnership with Buzz Aldrin suckered me into this. I work with the 11th president of India, Dr. APJ Kalam, who's the rocket scientist behind India's entire space program. He created the rockets that India used, for example, last week to launch a probe to Mars 2 days before we launched our to Mars. And what Dr. Kalam wants is to harvest solar energy space and energy in space where it's on 24/7. Down here on Earth, it's subject to clouds and this little weather anomaly called night, which blanks it out for half of the day. And up there, it's on 24/7, and it's five times as strong to seven times as strong as it is here on Earth. So he wants to transmit it down to Earth using microwaves. And that is very close to the kind of thing that Nikola Tesla had in mind.
Well, it's going to be dramatic, no doubt. Howard, let's take one more call, then the break, then we'll take final calls with you. Sue is in Rapid City, South Dakota. Sue, go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, George. It's an hour. It's an honor to be talking with you. And hi, Howard. I want to wish you both first a very happy Thanksgiving.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I'm on the other side of the social networking. I think it's really nice to talk to people. However, there are consequences to the use of all of this stuff. And a lot of that is kind of hazardous, don't you think? You know,
well, what part is hazardous?
Doing business over the lines, particularly now with the cyber war going on. And
well,
I want to know how you feel about that and about your mistrust, as I feel it's not a matter of lack of confidence, but it's a lack of trust in the government and everything associated with it and the technology.
Well, look what the government's been doing. Look what we've learned from Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning. The government's listening in on everything. So as George said earlier tonight, there's a negative and a positive side to everything. Or there's an old Bloomism that says that any good thing in overdose is a poison. And just like confidence in overdose is a poison. And technology, you have to be very wary. It is wise to be suspicious. I, as a person, individually, am not the least bit suspicious. I just go on about my business and love to take advantage of these things to the best extent possible and not care whether people are snooping on me or not. But that's a personal preference. And if you really feel that you need privacy, there's company after company after company that's selling privacy devices, privacy software, all kinds of privacy things to ensure that you can be about as private as you can. But there's no guarantee. There never was. There's never been any guarantee that if you put your money in a bank, it would always stay there.
Hold on. We're gonna take this break and come right back. Indeed, it is. Send us an editorial, by the way. We may record you and play it on the program, editorial at coasttocoastam.com. A little program note for you, live program for you on Thanksgiving night. We'll talk with Brenda Knight for a couple hours just about magic of Mothman and thanking people. And then later on, we'll have some open lines on Thanksgiving night for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Howard Bloom. Howard, let's get back to where we started this whole discussion. And that was, of course, people's lack of confidence, lack of trust, lack of faith, and it seems to be permeating. Yet I do see some people who are troopers who hold on, and they're trying, don't you?
Well, I think the majority of Americans are troopers. I think the majority of Americans are holding in there. I see people who are working extremely hard. I see people who are working harder than they were working when we were kids, George. because, you know, I've written three books at this place called the Tea Lounge. I'm working on a fourth. And in the Tea Lounge, we have people who are the 40% of Americans now who are contract laborers, who do not work directly for a boss, but instead work as semi-independents. And these people work from 8 o'clock in the morning until midnight. They work in part that way because they love what they are doing. And it's a kind of thing that you didn't see in the workplace in the 1960s or the 1970s. It's relatively new when people can use the laptop and the cell phone to work where they choose and on their own hours and can just throw themselves into it for all they're worth. Now, maybe this is a privilege being in New York. You know, maybe it's not that way in Ohio or in Michigan. But here, it's a wonder, it's a delight, especially for a workaholic like me who just loves work and thinks work is the reason for life, or one of the major reasons. But I'm curious, George, because this is the second time we've talked about confidence. It was diving about 2 months ago when we last talked about it. And what's your take on the situation with America's confidence and trust today?
Well, I think we've just been beaten down, Howard. We've been beaten down all these years, and people are just, they're at a point where, you know, they're fed up with it. They're tired of it. And they, you know what? They want it to stop.
Well, American wages have been holding even or slightly dipping since 1973. That's a long time now. But as we've discussed, the things you can buy with those wages are so utterly far beyond what they were in 1973, with entire computers that you can have on your lap and entire computers that you can hold in your hand that we call smartphones, and with the internet and Google and Zappos and all kinds of amazements, that it utterly defies belief. In a sense, though, we are not making any more money than we were then. We've got this vast cornucopia of things that we couldn't have imagined 40 years ago. However, it is disturbing to see that there are these huge disparities, and some people are just making the money hand over fist. And there's something to watch out for. It's called learned helplessness. And in learned helplessness experiments, you put dogs or rats, I hate to even think of these things, but you put them on an electrified floor so that when the floor is turned on, it punishes them. It sizzles their feet. And about 20% of dogs, at first the dogs jump and they scramble and they do everything possible to escape. But when it becomes obvious that there's no easy, quick solution to this, 20% of dogs just lay down on the floor and they take shock after shock after shock. And if you open the cage door so the dog can walk out, it no longer tries to escape the shock. And that's called learned helplessness. Your entire body is flooded with something called substance P, and it makes you passive and lethargic and incapable of even taking care of yourself. That's what we as Americans have to avoid for all we're worth, and that's why we have to recognize that our job every single day is to take on new challenges and to demonstrate to ourselves we have power over our lives by defeating those challenges, by triumphing over those challenges, even if in the case of many challenges it can take 6, 7, 10 years.
Okay, let's go to the phones now with Howard Bloom, Mark in Putnam Valley, New York, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, George. I've been a long-time listener of the show, and I think it's a great show, especially with the new edition of John B. Wells. But my Next. Question is that I saw a documentary, and it was the report from Iron Mountain. Iron Mountain is 15 scientists locked in a bunker, and they came up with this one world order plan, and it took place in 61, 62, 63, something. It's kind of a little foggy whether it was initiated by Kennedy or by Johnson. I tend to believe maybe it was Johnson. And what it did was it showed that everything that's falling into place according to that plan that was made is a dumbing down of society, changing the story, getting rid of religion, having the United States and Russia move their army and economics down the scale, and the UN coming up and dividing every country in the world into small groups all the way down to the address. and micromanaging everything and everybody, and that everybody who's not elite is pretty much cannon fodder. So when I was working, I'm 54, I was hit with NAFTA with a whole bunch of other people, and that's when I started learning the cruelty of what the government does. And then I also had a little earlier work for Otis Elevator, which was owned by United Technology, that was owned by Alexander Haig. You know who he was, right?
Right.
Sure do. He's in control.
And, and he was in the CFR. And apparently there's only one phase left to this plan. And everything that I've seen on this, which is on YouTube, report from Iron Mountain, seems to be taking place very effectively. And I was wondering if either one of you have seen it or heard of it or anything like that. And apparently it's when Bush Sr. Had done the most damage, and it followed through Clinton Jr. and present day Obama had put the finishing touches on putting the coffin, the nail in the coffin for our country by taking down our military and changing plans. And the last step is bringing in what appears to be aliens, even though I've seen spacecraft and stuff like that, and I know what I saw, and it was during the daytime, because I live near Indian Point.
All right, well, let's find out some of your thoughts on this, Howard. First of all, I don't think we have a weak military at all. We may not be using it in a correct way, but I think it's still the most powerful military out there. Howard?
Well, I agree with you. It's our military budget is the size of the next 14 nations' military budgets combined, and we're certainly not using it right. The old-style forms of invasion, I mean, if we've learned anything from Iraq and Afghanistan, it's that invasion doesn't work. In fact, Iran is using something far more effective, and it's proxy armies of people who come from the country that you're trying to take over. And they have two proxy armies of Iraqis in Iraq. Plus, they seem to have control over Nouri al-Maliki, who is the prime minister of Iraq. He spent 20 years in Iran when he was in exile. They have a proxy army that they built from scratch of Lebanese in Lebanon. That's what Hezbollah is. Hamas is less direct. They only partially control it. But that seems to be a much better strategy, and in fact, it's what we're trying to do in Afghanistan, training an army that will in turn guarantee what we call the security of the country. In other words, it will guarantee that that country goes along with our best interests. So we're having quite a bit of trouble with Hamid Karzai. And drones, that's a whole new way of making war that saves an awful lot of lives. In World War One, in the Battle of the Somme, 200,000 people were killed in a single day. That is more than, that's 40 times more than all the Americans who were killed in the Iraq War. 40 times more in a day than all the Americans killed in the Iraq War in 10 years. That's pretty stunning. So this is a way to get rid of the people who have declared that they are going to do everything they possibly can to harm you without, I mean, minimizing the number of people that you kill who are civilians. And I admit that an awful lot of civilians are killed, and it's a nightmare, it's a horror that should not happen. So we're advancing, and George is right. Our military is not being reduced in strength. These plans of a single world order have been coming up ever since the ideas of the Illuminati 400 years ago. It is very hard to have a one-world order, even though under George Bush the father, there was a one-world order plan laid out, and it was a plan because the Soviet Union had fallen, and America was the dominant, the only superpower at the time. But it wasn't the kind of plan, Mark, that you're laying out to us. And no country could pull that off, because there's always an Iran developing nuclear weapons. There's always a Russia, which has been challenging the United States for all it's worth. There's always a China, which has huge reserves of excess cash, while we have huge debts. And those countries are always going to be challenging anyone who would even think of establishing a new world order, even though the phrase new world order comes up from the Chinese. They talk about it. It's certainly a basic part of Muhammad's own form of Islam. He called for a takeover of the whole world, and that's not paranoia. That's in the Quran, the Hadith, and Ibn Ishaq and al-Tabari. But nobody's ever pulled it off. There are too many competitors.
Huh.
What do you think, George? You're the real expert on this subject.
Well, you know it
much better than I do.
Look, I think, as we echoed, we've got a strong military that's not being used properly. We should be there to help nations that need help from tyrants instead of being aggressors. You're right about Karzai. He, first of all, you know, he was a Unocal oil guy that we put in there, and he's turning on us now. He sees the power, and he wants it.
Yes, and also there's a guy named Brigadier General Qasem Soleimani, who's the head of something called the Quds Brigade in Pakistan, the Quds Force. And the Quds Force is Iran's, there's no direct translation for it, it's Iran's external territorial expansion army. It's a part of their army. And it controls all of these proxy armies that I've been talking about. Well, his very first assignment when he entered the Iranian Guards Corps 20 or 25 years ago was to see what he could do to gain power in Afghanistan. So, and right now there's been a lot of talk since the deal was made over the weekend, the Iranian nuclear deal, about bringing the Iranians in to help us contain the Taliban, because the Taliban are their enemies too. Well, the price of containing the Taliban is a big slice of the action in Afghanistan, and it's that kind of territorial expansion through proxy armies, much smarter than sending in our own troops, that the Iranians have specialized in. They may be ahead of us in knowing and having discovered the smart way to use military power.
You may be right there. David in Spokane, Washington. David, you're on with Howard Bloom. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to talk to Howard about a different perspective on the social networking, because I used to work in a public computer lab center. And
right.
I used to interact with a lot of boys and young men that were using social networking sites and chat rooms, a lot of chat rooms. And the one thing I noticed here recently is, like, a lot of young people, they say they have so many friends on Facebook or whatnot, but how many people will friend you or something. But the one thing I noticed is that these people that are so-called friends on Facebook, these people will never really go out with you anywhere. They won't go out to a club. They won't go out for a drink. They won't go out for coffee. They won't, if you ever needed any help, such as if you needed to ride to the airport, they wouldn't help you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
so you have a very good point,
David. People are kind of themselves. With their, they think that they're their friends, but really they don't have any friends.
Well, it's a tricky situation, because this is a big step up for people who are isolates. I grew up as an isolate when I was a kid. And if I'd had the internet, I would have had a bunch of friends who at least I could have spent some time with. And I had very few friends in person. But the people who are really your friends are the people you bonded with in unique moments, either your childhood, your high school years, or in crisis. Being in the trenches together, for example, in war, really bonds people together. And you can't replace that kind of friendship. You can't replace the kind of friendship of a family. And you have to have that real life connection. I mean, this is what you're implying, and it's true. You have to have that real life connection that involves warmth, loyalty, the willingness to go out of your way to save each other. That's essential to life. But there are many people who are isolates who will never have that. And at least having cyber friends is a start. Then if you can teach them how to have real friends in real life, by all means do, but it isn't that easy, and at least let them have something.
Well, let's at least let them have something indeed. Let's get one more quick call from Savant in Kansas City, Missouri. Go ahead, Savant.
How you doing, guys? Good listening to the radio program. I just had a couple of questions and comments real quickly.
Just one real quick question and comment.
Got you.
Go ahead.
The thing that I perceive is technology is like that new shiny horse that you open up the gates to let it into your castle there, because once you let it in, then the army comes out of the Trojan horse. You know, Obama has put in a kill switch on the internet and on technology. We have become so dependent on technology. And George, you've mentioned this before. What happens if we have an EMP? We've become so dependent on technology that it could be our downfall. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. It's a two-edged sword. We both agree with that. But, you know, we've become so dependent, and people that say it doesn't matter if they listen to us or watch us, you know, they're controlling people. And these politicians and people that are masters of industry are being controlled by those that gather this information so they can manipulate them if they don't do what they say. So,
you know, you have some good points. If there were an EMP, we'd all be in big, big, big trouble.
And that could happen, Howard. That could happen indeed. Howard, we're out of time. I want to thank you again, my friend. Always enlightening talking to you.
It's a pleasure, George, an absolute pleasure.
You take care of yourself. Howard Bloom, I call him the human computer. He's got a mind just like one. Track him by going to coasttocoastam.com, and you'll get all that information. Hey, stick with us. By the way, the cave in St. Louis just got hit with an incredible power outage. I'm on generators the last half hour. They work. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.